Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good day, everybody. We want to welcome you to this week's edition of Here's to Your Health. I'm your co-host, Dr. Ron Epley, and with me, as usual, is
your other co-host, Dr. Shane Goforth. So remember, this is a call-in show, so we'll encourage everybody to give us a call. That number is 347-989-8722. So give us a call, and we'll try to get you on the air with us. As long as we can remember to look at the computer, we'll do fine.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Right.
We have a tendency to look at that like we should. Anyway, so looking, here's what I'm going to start off with this week. This is an interesting one. It says, California health officials release guidelines to avoid cell phone radiation.
Okay.
So now, I'll read them in just a minute, but I just wanted to comment. Now what's happened is this has gone way beyond conspiracy theories, you know, quite a few years ago, and
right.
to both really true, and now health officials are issuing warnings about cell phones.
Right.
These things are not really that good for us. Let me see if I can find what it says here. It says, when you sleep, you keep the cell phone at least at arm's length away from your body. That's what they recommend. And also, not carrying your cell phone in your pocket, having it either in your purse or not carrying it with you at all. The research suggests cell phones could increase the risk of brain cancer and tumors, low sperm count, headaches, as well as impaired memory, hearing, and sleep.
Right. Wow.
That's a lot of stuff going related to cell phones.
Yeah,
so how many people that come into the doctor's office with headaches could actually be diagnosed with cell phone induced headaches?
Right.
And how do you figure that out unless he's just telling, hey, you got to get that cell phone away from your head?
Right. Yeah, I wonder how do you figure that out? You know, is it just that, or, you know, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, we've known some of this stuff because we brought it up on a radio show for a while, but it's actually, sometimes, even though you read the science behind it, there's so many political adversaries against you, right, like the whole cell phone industry, and it's kind of interesting that actually the health officials in California are actually releasing guidelines warning about the dangers of it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if we warn about the dangers, now I protect myself from mine all the time. I'm actually going to get some newer stuff to help protect things further. But how many people are going to listen to this and actually make a change? Or do you think their cell phones are so ingrained in their life that they really can't change it?
Yeah, right. That's a good question. I'm not really sure about that.
Yeah, I know, right?
I got to get some of those things you can... Yeah, I got to get some of those... I can't remember what they're called, the little things you stick on there to help with...
reduce about the radiation by about 75%.
Right.
Yeah, I do too. I haven't bought them yet, but I'm going to order them later today.
Yeah,
so, anyway...
Get that done.
Yeah, I'm just going to get all my staff too to say, hey, listen, you need to protect yourself. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Here, this talking. Here's an article that says, independence from dependency. Almost half the people who report recovery from a problem with drugs or alcohol did it on their own without assistance.
Yep.
So again,
I believe that very much.
What's that?
I believe that very much. I've seen it.
Yeah, me too. I've seen it too. And so the interesting thing is if half the people can quit on their own, did the other half even try, or do they just go to someone else?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't
right.
try. My office lady says they just didn't even try. So
that's probably the case.
Yeah, so how much of medicine that we do when this one where medical people intervene when they don't really need to?
Right.
A
yeah,
lot,
I wonder too.
Right?
Yep.
Well, and then wonder about this whole drug and alcohol stuff, right? You see it in Hollywood all the time where they get caught, they get drunk driving or busted without much drugs or something, and then they go, oh, I'm going to rehab, right? And so...
Right.
Yeah, it's all just a sham, to try to get out of getting in trouble for doing the drugs that you were doing.
Mm-hmm. Right. I know, it's an interesting thing. So then they come out and do it again.
Rehab, right? Now we're seeing the same thing with the sexual predators in Hollywood and stuff. They go to rehab and like, oh, they'll forgive me because I went to rehab because I had a problem. Yeah, you didn't admit you had a problem until you were caught.
Right.
So here's another one, Dr. Goforth. Remember we talked about a couple of weeks ago, maybe it was last week, about how stents don't help with the heart? Here's another one. Standard procedure for heart attack found to be ineffective. Such oxygen therapy does not improve survival.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another medical procedure that they do that everybody's done. They charge you an arm and leg for it. And now that someone finally says, it doesn't really work. We probably shouldn't do that anymore.
But isn't that scientific?
Yeah. Oh, here we go again.
A pseudoscientist out here trying to get stuff done.
Yeah. God, I know. Well, you know, it's like, if you remember On Purpose with Patrick DiCampo and...
Yep, I sure do.
They used to talk every once in a while about scientism and how, you know, people... science is almost like a religion to them. It's not really utilized in the way it was intended or supposed to be.
Right.
Exactly. Now, you can put global warming as one of those things that science, they believe it without even looking at the real science. Or they cherry pick the science that supports their viewpoint.
Right.
Anyway, so here we go again. Here's one we've read before. It says, drink coffee and live longer. Recent research finds 3 cups daily reduces the risk of death from all causes.
Nice. I'm working on my first one.
I'm in the middle of my first one, too. So we've read 3 to 5 cups is what we're reading all the time.
Right.
And
I'm sticking with 5.
Yeah, I'm sticking with my 5 as well on the days that I drink coffee. So anyway, let's see. Harvard study backs coffee's beneficial effects. So again, it came from Harvard. Okay, get that baby outside. A new study finds exposure to high levels of vitamin D in early childhood reduces the risk of diabetes. Did you hear that? High levels.
Yes, I did. High levels. I get them outside, get those lights indoors, and work that vitamin D.
Yep, got to work it. So those with a high cardiovascular risk profile should eat dark chocolate with olive oil and new vines. So, dark chocolate with olive oil. I'm not going to go into all this stuff because we've talked about all this stuff before, how healthy it is. I just like it when... more new studies confirming what we've said before. Because we get new listeners all the time anyway. Oh, listen to this.
This
is interesting. They got a new condition, Shane. It's a mysterious new condition. You know what they call it?
No, I don't. Scromity mongers, I don't know.
It's called scromity.
Oh, scromity. Yes, I did hear about scromity.
Yeah, it hits weed smokers across the United States and causes them to vomit and scream.
Yep.
You know, that's not to be confused with praying to the porcelain god after you drink too much.
Right.
That's not screaming. That's just like, oh, God, I promise I won't do it again.
That's exactly right. I know, that was pretty funny. Actually, I think I saw that on your desk last week.
Did you? Yeah.
That's how I knew about it. We didn't get through it last week, but I remember seeing it and quietly laughing to myself.
It says, scromiting is becoming an all-too-familiar sight in emergency rooms. The condition is called cannabinoid hyperemesis syndrome, or CHS. It is not yet properly understood. Medical experts believe the symptoms appear from individuals using or consuming heavy amounts of marijuana over a long period of time. Doctors note that the condition could stem from the body being oversaturated by cannabinoids, affecting the hypothalamus. So the interesting thing is about oversaturated with cannabinoids, because it is a fat-soluble drug, right?
Right.
And it is stored in your fat, and I don't know, I mean, I'm not even an expert by far in cannabis, but I seem to recall that it can be stored in your fat for as long as 6 months. So if you don't, if you're continuing to heavy use it, I could just imagine your whole body is just saturated with cannabinoids all the time, especially your brain, which is 50% fat.
Right.
So, yeah, I can see where it might be problematic in some of these heavy consumers, especially if they start young and smoke heavy for years.
Well, you know, then that just leads me back to the argument of what happened to it not being overdosed. You know, what happened to not being able to overdose on marijuana?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't think I don't know if we can or not.
Right.
But maybe that's what it is, just toxicity of it, of consuming it for too much or too long rather than basically an overdose.
Right.
And I wonder if you ate all...
You know, in a sense, the way I see it is it's still kind of an overdose in a sense if you're having it, you know, if you're oversaturated in it, because it takes that many doses or whatever to get to that point. So in a way, it's a similar thing.
Yeah. Okay. So consuming sugary drinks during pregnancy may increase asthma risk in mid-childhood. So here's a summary of the study. It says children between the ages of 7 and 9 may be at greater risk of developing asthma if they consume high amounts of fructose in early childhood, or their mothers drink a lot of sugary sweetened beverages while pregnant, according to the new research published online in the Annals of American Thoracic Society. Isn't that interesting? So pregnant mothers consuming sugary drinks, or the child drinking sugary drinks, may end up developing asthma later because of the sugar.
Right. That's crazy.
It is. Well, you know, sugar is just, you know, it's really not good for us at all. It's quite toxic. And I want to remind our listeners that, you know, my favorite book on the subject is by Gary Tubbs, and it's called The Case Against Sugar.
Right.
And it's quite fascinating when you read the whole history of the sugar industry and how we've known for a long time that it's really harmful. And then I got a couple of articles. Let's see if I can show you. I got a big pile this week. For some reason, they they published a whole ton of stuff all of a sudden. But anyway, it says here they are. They're articles in the New York Times. They appeared before. One was in September, and the other was in November this year. And so I was reading them, and it's related to what I talk about. It says, how the sugar industry shifted blame to fat.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I remember how they did that, too, now.
Yeah, it says, the internal sugar documents recently discovered by a researcher at the University of California, San Francisco, and published Monday in the Journal of the American Medical Association, Internal Medicine, suggests that 5 decades of research into the role of nutrition in heart disease, including many of today's dietary recommendations, may have been largely shaped by the sugar industry.
Mm-hmm.
In order to shift the blame to some other product instead of theirs.
Right.
And then here's another article, the one that occurred just in November last month. The sugar industry long downplayed potential harms. The sugar industry funded animal research in the 1960s that looked into the effects of sugar consumption on cardiovascular health, and then buried the data when it suggested that sugar could be harmful, according to newly released historical documents.
Right. Crazy how that works.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So... yeah, the sugar is, it's really bad news. Now, the problem is, everybody and his brother is addicted to it, including Dr. Goldfort.
That's 100% true.
Yeah, and it's a terrible addiction. I think it's probably the toughest addiction there is to quit.
Right. Well, you know, what I've always said it is, I wish, you know, like losing weight was as easy. I've said it in the sense that, you know, I wish losing weight was as easy as quitting smoking. But realistically, it's not about eating, as it were. It's about sugar.
It's really about the sugar, mostly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I am completely addicted to it.
Yeah, and then those things that convert to sugar rapidly in your blood, like, you know, like a lot of wheat and grains and stuff like that.
Right.
Like,
right.
I always found thing many years ago when I found out, when they were looking at, I forget what they call it, some sort of sugar index or how fast food
right.
converts. I can't remember the name of that, but
yeah,
I remember.
Index.
Glycemic index. Thank you very much. That's what it was.
Yeah.
When I found out that saltine crackers actually have a higher glycemic index than actual table sugar. They convert so fast in your blood. You know.
Yep.
And again, that makes sense why
a lot of kids get like this.
Yep, it does, right? And it also makes sense why sometimes when you're eating soup, you want those crackers. Because all of a sudden you got sugar in your blood almost immediately.
Mm-hmm. Mm, that's nuts.
Okay. Yeah. So speaking of sugar, it says your mood depends on the food you eat, and what you should eat changes as you get older. Does dietary and dietary practices differently affect mental health of young adults versus older adults, according to the research?
Right.
So I'm not going to go into it. This is a pretty word-heavy article. But what I thought fascinating is your mood depends on your food you eat. So
I know that
is.
That's craziness, is what that is. That's
pretty.
That's very interesting.
Well, you know, my office lady, who's worked for me for nearly 10 years now. She's finally, after all these years, able to get off grains and dairy for more than 2 weeks. And I'm telling you, I don't think I've ever been happier last week than I saw her at least 2 or 3 days coming into work. And it's like, well, welcome to my world of being happy all the time. Because she used
right.
to give me a hard time and go, are you coming in happy again? We have to put up with you. You're whistling on the way up the stairs, singing and humming. It's like, oh, my God, I don't know if we can deal with you anymore. And so last week,
right.
because she's been a couple of off this stuff, she's been right there with me, right? So,
yeah,
but it's kind of hard, even though she works for me and she knows better, the food addictions and the lifestyle that we leave around it, it's damn near impossible to make some easy changes. But once she did
That's
it,
right.
I'm proud of her. Doing real, and she looks really good right now when I'm looking at her going, oh, now she's flirting with me. Oh, my God, what am I going to do? And she's pretty happy about it, too, right?
Right. Good for her.
But now I bet her family's going, what's wrong with you? What kind of drugs are you taking now?
That's right. Are you using again? Or are you using or whatever? You know, I don't know if there's a...
Yeah, are you using? What the hell's wrong with you? You're so happy all
That's
of a sudden.
That's funny. Yeah. Are you on drugs, Mom? Oh, that's so funny.
But, yeah, but again, it took working here 10 years before she finally was
right.
able to get to... No, she did it for 1, 2, 3 days, but, you know, it takes a while to be able to break that habit, and then once you break it, it's almost like, you know what, I don't really want to do that, or you'll do it accidentally because there's something in the food that you eat that you go, oh, my God, you get a bellyache. And again, the problem is once you're really clean, when you react, you really react, and it's awful. It's like, oh, my God, I can't
eat
like this anymore.
You're right. That's pretty amazing, too, how that happens. How much you react.
But if you keep eating like every 2 or 3 days crappy food, you'll stay feeling kind of not bad. You don't realize how bad it is.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, so
yep.
she's smiling over there. Yeah, pretty proud of herself. I am too, actually. Because I like to tell patients because they think I'm crazy. I'm just a doctor trying to sell something to them. Go, ask Tammy. Go ask her. She'll tell you.
Right.
And she goes, thanks, Doc. I don't want to talk to people. I just want to stay here and do my job.
That's right. I don't want to have to talk to people. Not any more than what I already do. Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
So, anyway, here we go. Action games expand the brain's cognitive ability, according to a new study.
Action games?
Yeah, it's actually not surprising to me. It was published in the journal Psychological Bulletin, and it says the human brain learns and adapts. Numerous research studies have focused on the impact of action video games on the brain by measuring cognitive abilities such as perception and reaction time. An international team of psychologists has assembled data from the last 15 years to quantify how action games impact cognition. The research has resulted in two meta-analyses which reveal a significant improvement in cognitive abilities of gamers.
Hmm. Cool.
Yeah, now, that doesn't say it affects all cognitive abilities. And it just basically they were talking about perception and reaction time. So
right.
I don't know if it has a good effect or a negative effect on other cognitive abilities. But it is interesting because, you know, we hear all the time about how bad video games are for kids. And I think there's a lot of negative to them. But, you know, then again, if you got someone that's a little bit challenged, like I have a nephew who has Asperger's disease, right? And they live on video, right? That's about the only social network they have. So I definitely see benefits from it. Okay, listen to this. This is something we've always known all along, Dr. Goforth. But it says, don't mix business with pleasure. New researchers show that blurring the boundaries between work and personal life can lead to exhaustion.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
It says,
okay.
Yeah, the blurring of boundaries can affect people's sense of well-being, as well as leading to exhaustion. So they're enough. I read the article, and they're talking about when you get away from work, your boss shouldn't be requiring that you answer emails when you're away from work. And
okay.
I didn't. It wasn't this study, but I was sitting there reading it, thinking about it, going, you know what? If your boss wants you to answer emails and text messages when you're off work that are related to work, then why can't you answer emails and text messages from home when you're at work?
Right. Right. Or why aren't you being paid 24/7 for that?
Yeah, why aren't you being paid 24/7 for that? So, yeah. And, you know, we've always known it, right, is that you don't mix business with pleasure when it comes to relationships at work because,
right,
you know, in our profession, in the healthcare profession, it's illegal, but we also know what kind of a problem it creates in a work environment, potentially, when that happens.
Right.
I guess other things that are mixed at work are probably equally, or if not equally, very much a potential problem.
Yep, I would think so.
Got to keep them both separate. Yeah, we know the old stories of the husband that comes home from work and brings the work home with him and wants to beat the wife and daughter. So stressful at work. It's like you got to learn to separate the two.
Right.
Okay, so here's something that we might be able to do. This is from Georgia State University. In light of the fact that this year's flu vaccine is only effective 10% of people, here's something, a new study. It says lactic acid bacteria can protect against the influenza virus.
Nice.
So here's a summary. It says lactic acid bacteria, commonly used as probiotics to improve digestive health, can offer protection against different subtypes of influenza A virus, resulting in reduced weight loss after viral infection and lower amounts of virus replication in the lungs, according to a study at Georgia State University. So
sounds
there you
good.
Go. Again, another one. This one's Lactobacillus casei DK128. But another reason for probiotics, right? They help protect against the flu virus. Okay, so bring them in women's hospital. ADHD medication use during pregnancy ups the risk of birth defects.
Wow. Yep.
Yeah, so this was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association Psychiatry. It says, a new study leverages data from multiple large cohorts to define and quantify what, if any, increased risk may be posed by taking the most commonly used ADHD medication. The team found that one medication, methylphenidate, increased risk of heart defects by a small amount, while other medication, amphetamines, did not. Anyway, we don't recommend people do any medications when they're pregnant, right? Because they're really not
right.
Good research data.
Exactly
they just
right.
Test them. So what happens is they just the doctors go, oh no, it's that you. Excuse me.
Bless you.
Thank you. Doctors go, I'm not aware of any negative studies on this, so you go ahead and take it. Well, there are no negative studies because there's never been a study done, period. So they kind of like, okay, so now we've done hundreds of thousands of women who have been taking it over the last 10 years. So now let's go back and see what really happened. And they go, oh, we're so sorry. We caused birth defects in you people. We should have known better, but, you know, we just wanted to sell drugs.
Right. So the way it is.
And it is. It's the truth, right? Just...
Yep.
Okay, here's something I discovered. Probably you too. Because it doesn't take a rocket scientist to do this. It says, eating together as a family helps children feel better physically and mentally.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. So... says children who routinely eat their meals together with their family are more likely to experience long-term physical and mental health benefits, according to this research. It's like, well, duh, we kind of know that.
Right.
But I think people need to be reminded because I see people all the time eating separately. They don't sit down at the table and eat at a specific time or anything. It's like warm something up or eat fast food on the way home from work.
Yeah, we've been guilty of that too. Trying to be, you know, get done fast because we don't have any time.
Yeah, well, I personally, it's one of my favorite things that I did raising my two boys is I did all the cooking in our house. So because I'm a chiropractor, I was able to get home at a decent time most of the time when they were younger, or even taking Fridays off at one time. And so one of the things that I like to do is have dinner with the family. So what they would do is they would come out and they'd either do homework in the kitchen while I'm cooking and then talk and I could help them. Or they'd just come out and we'd put like celery and carrots and stuff and they'd come out and talk and eat it. And then we'd have a nice dinner and we'd visit forever. And then they'd help me clean up afterwards. And it was like, oh my God, that's some of the best times I've ever had in my life was just around dinner
right.
with the family.
Right.
Well, it is nice, right? That's why we celebrate Thanksgiving,
yeah.
And we have fantasy around the whole how well Thanksgiving is, right? Which can
right.
be really nice. But you know what? Every meal can be that much.
Yep, exactly right.
You know, I mean, if you have any kind of religious beliefs, usually they want you to pray before your meal and give thanks to the meal. But if you're not religious, you can still give thanks for your meal and be grateful that you have the food in front of you and grateful that your family's with you. You don't have to wait till
right.
Thanksgiving.
Right. Exactly right.
I mean, I certainly know how blessed my life was to be able to do that. And, you know, that's the hard part when your kids grow up. Well, you've had one grow up and left, but you still got
yep.
one at home. But that is kind of the tough part, is you raise your kids a certain way and you get used to a lifestyle for a long time and all of a sudden they're gone and you go, okay, what's next?
Right. Right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because it takes long enough to get the kids out of the house that you're left with that. Well, now what?
Yeah, now what? What do I do now? Oh, my God. I still have a hard time trying to cook for not so many people.
Right.
But my
I bet
office
you do too.
Down because they like it when I bring it to work. It's like, yeah, don't ever learn to cook a small amount because we like it when you overcook and you got to bring all this food in.
That's right. It's good for them.
Okay. Okay, toxic chemicals in salons, lack of education, lead to adverse health effects. There's two studies find consumers are unaware of most health risks at beauty salons and that nail technician training and handling chemicals needs improvement.
Right.
So here's something I got a rhetorical question for you. So you don't have to answer it, but I think you will. How do people not understand that going to a beauty parlor and all that awful smell has got to be bad for your health?
You know, it's a good question, isn't it? That's a question I'd like to know the answer to as well. I mean, I know it's rhetorical and all, but gee, that's just bad stuff. I mean, how many times do you walk by those places and it's just, I kind of have to, like, you know, almost run past so you don't breathe it in because it's so offensive.
Yeah, when I was in the military, I had a couple of colleagues that, because I was, after I got out of the full-time military, I was in the National Guard, so I had a couple of colleagues in the National Guard who, they all opened up a beauty salon, right? And I was talking to them a long time ago about the toxins in it, how awful it was, and I remember the one lady installed a pretty expensive air filtration system to get the air, to pull the air out of the salon. And when she did it, I mean, she spent a lot of money. It was like $10,000 or $15,000 to do that. And she was
right.
Telling me, she goes, that was really good advice on my part. It cost her a lot of money, but it certainly increased business like crazy because more people would come in because, you know, I think a lot of people are aware how toxic it is. They just put up with it minimally because
right.
They got to get their hair done. Because I live next to, my office, your office too, we're right next door to a hairdresser, right?
Right.
And we see people go in there and get their hair done every month. They won't get an adjustment. They won't brush their teeth.
Right.
They won't go to the dentist, but those old ladies will get their hair done every month like clockwork.
Like clockwork, yep.
Yeah.
That is so true.
It cracks me up sometimes. You know, I think it's funny because, you know, I bring, when they're not in the office, UPS will deliver stuff for me, and I'll take it over there. And I think they when the door opens, they go, "Oh God, he has no hair. We can't help him."
Yeah, that's probably true. Oh really? And what can we do for you today?
Yeah,
we're not a barber.
What are you
doing? Do shaves. Oh, funny. Yeah, that's probably true. It's kind of funny to play with that idea. What do people think when I walk in?
What the heck? Like,
yeah.
What do the clients think? And then what do the beauticians think? Going, doggone it, we can't do anything with his hair.
Right.
Yeah.
His hair is beyond help.
Here's what it says. Here's what the story says. Clients who frequent hair and nail salons exhibit more skin and fungal diseases than those who visit less often, and nail salon technicians are receiving inadequate training in the use of chemicals, suggests two Rutgers School of Public Health studies. So, yeah, they get more skin and fungal diseases. Duh.
Right.
I don't think I'm going to go get a pedicure anytime soon.
Yeah, me neither.
Well, maybe I'll go have a reflexology massage on my feet, but I think I'll avoid the pedicure for now.
Yeah. Reflexology massage. Boy, I tell you, that sounds almost like heaven.
Well, you know, that massage chair I have really massages the bottom of my feet. And honestly, Shane, or Dr. Goforth, it feels great. Most of my
right.
clients, that's one of their favorite parts of that chair massage is having their feet
right.
massaged. Well, there's a couple that
yep.
can't handle it. The stimulus is just too much for them on the bottom of their feet. But most people, that's their favorite part.
Yeah, I can believe that. For sure. That's, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so popular blood pressure medicine is linked to increased risk of skin cancer. Again, Danish set their sights on the antihypertensive medicine containing hydrochlorothiazide in relation to increased risk of skin cancer. So they said more specifically, drugs containing HCTZ or hydrochlorothiazide are linked to squamous cell carcinoma. No, we want to blame that on the sun. You know what I mean?
Yep. I certainly do. Because, you know, if we can get you people covered up, get away from the sun, get some less vitamin D in you, we might be able to make some more money selling you some other drugs.
So anyway, that the vitamin D, that reminds me, when I was at your sister's birthday party, I met some people. Here's the thing that when people ask you questions, because they find out you're a chiropractor, right? They ask you all kinds of questions. Anyway, the funny part is I see over and over again, not just at your place, but that's the latest reminder, is people have some belief systems that are pretty hard for them to let go. When you start talking to them about degenerative arthritis in their spine and how it's related to not enough movement and a vitamin D deficiency, it's quite interesting to watch how they get kind of defensive. And their arthritis is because they overwork their bodies, right? You know what I mean?
Yep. Yep. And I know exactly who you're talking about, too, because I talked to him, too. And so everybody knows, that was a pretty big party. There was like 50 people there at least. So,
yeah.
And we didn't actually sit there. We hardly even talked to each other there.
No, I know. Well, we talked to each other enough anyway, I think, right?
Yeah, right. But that was cool.
But you know what I mean, right? He's not the only one. And by the way, he's a nice guy if he's listening.
Great guy.
Wonderful. Yeah, it's wonderful meeting him. But it's kind of funny how he's just a representative of the latest one of someone you're talking to, how they kind of have a belief about some things, and you hit them with new science, and they could he didn't get his feathers ruffled or anything, didn't get upset or anything, but... How they could really hold on to that, right?
Yep. Also, I have to give that man credit. I know both of his daughters. Fabulous people. He and his wife have done well.
Oh, my God. I met his two daughters there, too. And I'm like, oh, geez, this is the little girls I always wanted, right?
Right.
Because I had two boys. And it's like, wow, these girls are incredible. I mean, I was talking to his one daughter.
Yep.
She was at Darren, and I wanted to just talk to each other the whole thing. It's like, it was quite impressive. It was very impressive who they were and how they raised their kids. So yeah, like kudos to them. I enjoyed myself thoroughly.
Really. Yep. Fantastic.
Yeah. There's a lot of good people there that I met, too, so it was really actually kind of fun. You know, that's one thing during my marriage, Dr. Gilford, that I really missed is that my ex-wife was kind of obsessive-compulsive, and I wanted to have parties, because you've been to ones at my house, and I love doing them, right? But she was too obsessive-compulsive about it. Everything had to be too clean and too much. And I just hated to see the stress that she was under trying to do that. And so I kind of didn't have very many. But, man, I certainly like them. I certainly like the social setting. So it was really fun going to your sister's birthday party to do that stuff again.
Right.
I really, really kind of miss that kind of thing. And it was a dinner party. That's really what I like, not a party where you're drinking and getting drunk.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, no, we actually, that was a cognitive choice we had, too. We decided that. And my sister's not a drinker, never has been. And, you know, we just decided that we were having an alcohol-free party for her. Of course, there's lots of reasons we did that party, but which you know a lot of. It was a fantastic party. We had a great time. And I like having those big dinner parties, right? You get people together and you can just, you know, you know, a lot of times talk to other people. I had a hard time talking to people I didn't know very well there because, you know, I'm trying to work the whole room a little bit, but for the most part, I kept getting drawn to family that I haven't seen in like 10 years or better.
Yeah, that's
there's
why
one
we
man there. Yeah.
That's why we got more of that stuff.
Yes, I agree. And maybe that's what we need to do because, you know, my wife is a lot of the same ways as yours. Your ex-wife was in the sense that she doesn't like to have parties at our house because, you know, the OCD-ness or whatever, it doesn't matter, just the anxiety that it creates for them.
Yep.
So you kind of go, yeah, okay, fine. You know, you have a hard time fighting that because of that particular, you know. But still, it's kind of what we need to do probably is just have the party someplace else.
Well, yeah. I think we need to do it more. I mean, you know, look at the people that I met there didn't know you were a part of a radio show, and their family members.
Right. Right. I know, right? Hello.
It's like, what? What? Shane does the radio? Yeah, we've been doing it for about 12 years. What? Really? Yeah, he's actually really good. I'm better, but, you know.
Yeah, right. I'm better, but hey, you know. That's right.
That's the one with some of the people that I tell them about that, right? That's the one thing. I just can't resist doing that. Yeah, we've been doing a radio show, but, you know, I'm better. And then they look at you like, what? And, yeah, but if you ask him, he'll tell you he's better.
That's right.
But it's kind of funny the way they look at you. It's like, because they're strangers, they don't know you're joking. I'm joking, right? It's like, oh, really?
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Yeah, but he sucks.
Even one of the roommates, I have two roommates, right? And one of them loves to do the party thing, and the other one doesn't like it. But after she saw how disappointed I was on the last one I tried to do one through, she said she's going to make it a concerted effort to make sure that she's in on them and helping in the future because she just sees how important it is to me. She goes, oh, my God, you really am on these things. You love these things, don't you? And I go, yeah. And she goes, you know, when you can't do it or something can fall through and you have to cancel it, I'm so depressed and so bummed out that she goes, well, we're just going to make this happen more often. I'm just going to get over my crap and we're just going to do it.
Right.
So
well,
which is a nice attitude, which is a nice attitude compared to when I was married, right? So.
Right. Right. And even though you don't have that kind of relationship with your roommate, it's still awesome that you have a roommate that's going to be there for you in that way, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the other one was disappointed. She had to work this Christmas, and so she was going to come. We were going to dress up together when we went to her because she likes to do that stuff, right? And so this is going to be fun going to the fun theme party, and so but she didn't do it, but it was fun.
That's okay. At least you made it, and that was a great time. But, you know, as to that, too, you know, that's also why you and I both like doing Christmas parties, you know. Yeah, we both love Christmas and whatever. Our families like Christmas and all that. But more than that, we love getting together and just being able to sit down and break bread together and you know, as it were. Although we break bread without eating much bread.
Well, I think you just like trying my new beer or wine that I've made.
Yeah, that's right. That's usually the case. I like showing up at your house for that. Oh, you got new stuff? Let's try that out.
Well, how many new ones you got? Open that one, too.
That's right. Well, you know, I've only ever had one criticism for you, right? Is that one wine that you sent me home with tasted like turpentine.
I don't know if we talked about it on the radio. I don't know if we ever talked about this on the radio, but I brewed for many, many years, right? And I'm actually pretty good at it. But one of the things that all brewers talk about, they have stories about their kids getting into their alcohol, right? And then I've talked to kids, you know, as they're adults, and they all tell you the stories of breaking into dad's stash, right? Anyway, so I made this dairy wine, which Dr. Gopher was talking about, that turpentine stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I never make sure. She only makes good quality grape wines. But I decided to do this. And it was awful. And that's what it tasted like.
It really was.
So, So I, my kids, when they got older and in college, I'm asking them, hey, did you guys ever get into it? And then they both start laughing, and they tell me the story of, like, they had their friends come over when we were gone or something. I might have been out of town. And they were going to get into my wine and have a good party and stuff. And they opened up the cherry wine. That was so awful. We've never touched it again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty funny. I remember you telling me that story too. Yeah, that was pretty awesome right there.
I swear, that stuff was so awful. You could feel the paint off your car if you poured it on there.
Yeah, I think maybe I would have. Yeah, it was. Oh. I think it barely, like, hit my taste buds, and I was spitting it out, you know. Oh, my God. Yeah, it was pretty rough.
But it certainly cured the kids. That's what's funny. Like, you never got into it after that? No, that was awful. We never did it again.
Oh, that's so funny. Never, ever.
And
since
that time, they've all helped me brew and bottle and everything, stuff home with them. They're adults, right? But,
right.
You know, it's I love telling that story, because especially the other brewers, because they all have stories of their kids getting into their stuff. And I'm going, man,
right.
I got the cure for
that. Yeah, that's pretty awesome right there. Yeah, I fixed them. Yeah, I think if I'd have been a kid and got into your cherry wine, that'd have fixed me too. Oh. Because, you know, that's it, right, too? And that's why I wanted one of your bottles of cherry wine, too. I'm thinking cherry wine. Oh, my God, that's got to be good. You know, it's going to be a little bit sweet, and it's going to be, you know, just really easy to drink. And, oh, it's just going to be awesome. And you get all excited about drinking this cherry wine. And, oh, you just about vomit when it touches your tongue. You know, you're like, oh. That was bad. Yeah, I probably would have been done too. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you drank all my other good stuff, so you go, oh my God, Epley's got some good stuff. Let me try this. This is going to be really good. And then it's like, well,
that's right.
We better pour it in a glass and smell it first before we try tasting it in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I think you actually tried to warn me about that wine too. You said, very good. Yeah. Oh, no, I'll try it anyway. It's okay. Your wine's not that bad. Come on. Don't be holding out. Yeah, well, the one time I should have listened. Funny stuff.
I know. Well, see, I love, those are the fun stories, right? So, anyway. Right. Exercise changes gut microbial composition independent of diet, according to this new research. There are actually two studies, one of mice and the other humans, offer the first definitive evidence that exercise alone can change the composition of microbes in the gut.
Nice.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So your bike riding has probably changed the content of your gut.
Yep. Hopefully for the better.
Yeah. Well, I'm assuming that's what it is, because it only makes sense that creates an environment more for healthy bacteria, whereas all of our lack of exercise, crappy foods creates an environment for unhealthy bacteria.
Right.
Okay, now here we go again. It says fish exposed to treated wastewater have altered behavior. Says researchers have found that fish living downstream from a wastewater treatment plant show changes in their normal behavior, ones that made them vulnerable to predation when exposed to elevated levels of antidepressant drugs in the water. So here's what's happening.
Yep.
Elevated levels of antidepressant drugs in the water. How are they getting antidepressants in the water?
Right. People flush them down the toilet.
Or maybe they're urinating antidepressants out. That maybe.
Or maybe they are. Yeah, that's right.
Not being totally broke down in the body.
Right.
Yeah. And so what? So what happens is, what if downstream, we use that as drinking water, and now it's treated, but it still has the chemicals in it.
Right.
another reason
yeah,
to filter your
product. Yeah, that sets up for a whole lot of problems, doesn't it?
Yeah, no kidding, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Estrogens as well, right?
Right.
Okay, wow. So listen to this. This is Washington University School of Medicine. And it says, obesity prevented in mice than a high-fat diet. Researchers activated the hedgehog protein pathway in the fat cells of mice. After 8 weeks of eating a high-fat diet, mice that had been engineered with genes to activate the pathway didn't gain weight, but control animals whose hedgehog pathways were not activated became obese. So there's ways to stay skinny on a real high-fat diet. But genetically,
nice.
We do it. So how do you activate it? I didn't read in here how to activate that pathway.
Right.
I'm not going to read it right now. Pregnant women with post-traumatic stress disorder have higher levels of stress hormone, cortisol. Duh, right? If they got, yeah.
Right.
Sure. Like, well, duh, isn't that the definition of stress hormone? Stress, PTSD, post-traumatic stress. So if they're under stress, they got elevated cortisol levels.
Yeah, right. Kind of makes you, kind of seems self-evident.
Yeah, I know. DTP vaccine increases mortality in young infants 5 to 10-fold compared to unvaccinated infants. I think we read this earlier in the year, but I wanted to bring it up again because we're starting to see more push towards vaccines again.
Yeah, we are. I've noticed that too.
So 5 to 10 times increased mortality in infants that are vaccinated versus unvaccinated. So how safe are vaccines, Dr. Gopore?
Sounds like they're not very safe to me. Sounds like they're pretty dang deadly.
I guess if they just kill you when you're a child or an infant, then we just don't count you as part of the statistics of vaccine-induced problems.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. Not
well, it's not a problem
because
you're dead, right?
Yeah, they just died.
Yeah. Scary stuff.
I was talking to a patient about this one the other day because this is an interesting study. It says hot flashes could be a precursor to diabetes.
Okay.
Yeah, so here we go. Hot flashes, undoubtedly the most common symptom of menopause, are not just uncomfortable and inconvenient, but numerous studies demonstrate they may increase the risk of serious health problems, including heart disease. A new study suggests that hot flashes, especially when accompanied by night sweats, also may increase the risk of developing diabetes. Okay, so I used to treat women all the time for hormonal problems in my younger days.
Right.
And one of the that I remember reading is that before the Japanese developed a more of a Western-based diet, the translation of the word hot flash didn't exist. I don't know if that's really true or it's just the stuff that I was reading at the time, but more of a soy-based diet, they determined, with the soy isoflavones, dianacine, and genistein, seemed to prevent menopausal symptoms. And that once those Japanese people moved to the United States, all of a sudden they started doing it. So it really only makes sense that as we move to more of a Western-based diet, it's more sugar-based, you know what I mean?
Right. I do know what you mean.
And so it only makes sense to me that if you have hot flashes, that hot flashes shouldn't really exist, but if you're having them and all you're doing is taking hormones to prevent them, you're not changing your diet at all, so you're going to continue to have these problems.
Right. Stands to reason.
There is a reason. So get your blood sugar back to normal if you're having hot flashes. And I think it's more of a metabolic-related problem than anything else.
Right.
Oh, Oh, I finally found a study on this. Remember when we went to a seminar on brain injuries, and they said traumatic brain injury causes leaky gut syndrome?
Uh-huh.
Here's one. It says traumatic brain injury causes intestinal damage, as the study shows. It says a two-way link between traumatic brain injury and intestinal changes has been uncovered by research. These interactions may contribute to increased infections in these patients and may also worsen chronic brain damage.
Wow, scary stuff anyway.
Yeah, so I'm going to read a little bit more about it.
Yeah.
It says this is the first study to find that traumatic brain injury in mice can trigger delayed long-term changes in the colon and that subsequent bacterial infections in the gastrointestinal system can increase post-traumatic brain inflammation and associated tissue loss. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is.
So, yeah. So these concussions are nothing to shake a stick at these days. They can cause all kinds of problems.
Scary is they've been causing all kinds of problems. It's nothing new. It's just, you know, now we have a better understanding of what's going on in there. Scary
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, I know.
Look at the mismanagement of concussions we've had for so many years now.
Forever.
It's just scary, right?
Yeah, I know. Well, think about it. In all the contact sports, I'm not saying women don't have traumatic brain injuries, but for millennia, men have been the ones participating in contact sports, right? And
right.
So they've suffered many, many, many injuries to their brains. And, you know, a lot of them have been damaged so much that they would never be able to go to college if it wasn't for a sports-related scholarship.
Right. Right.
And, you know,
I find interesting about that, too, the men in sports and stuff like that is, and no way do I want people to think I'm making excuses for people, but the things that we know about mild traumatic brain injuries, you know, concussions, things like that, it alters their moods and it alters their behaviors. And so many things like this, and, you know, it makes some men more violent. And so a lot of times you wonder, you tend to wonder, you know, all the things we've ever seen in the past about, you know, the cycle of violence, you know, where you know, just because dad beat on a mom and the kids, well, now I got to beat on my wife and kids, you know, because that's the cycle. Well, not necessarily, right? I mean, is it did they get a concussion from dad, or is it that they got a concussion out on the playing field, you know, whatever the game they're playing, and they got a concussion, you know? So, you know, is it that, or, you know, is it this nice, mild-mannered man all of a sudden got a concussion from whatever, whether it be a car accident or he got in a pickup game of football or whatever, and now he, you know, has this concussion, and now he starts beating on his wife. You know, is that a cause? You know, is that a reason for that? And how do we correct for that? You know, besides putting the man in jail or whatever, right? Besides that, how do we correct for that?
Yeah, I know, because you do wonder, right? You wonder how much of that really, how much of the what they're trying to call toxic masculinity these days is made more related to brain injuries and damage to the brain. Maybe brain inflammation in addition to, because again, the brain, and look what we just found here. You get a brain injury, which screws up your gut, and then the gut, you're more likely to get an infection, and that infection increases more brain damage to the brain, right? And so it's a vicious cycle. So how do we break the cycle, right? One of the ways that you and I are both trying to break the cycle a little bit is we're trying to do, you know, through brain scan, we're trying to do fish oil testing of people's brains, right?
Right.
Or of their brain. And then trying to get them to take more fish oil and then vitamin D. And then with serial testing, we find that there's definitely improvements in cognitive function. And also we know that people that have adequate levels of fish oil in their body, it's neuroprotective against trauma to the brain to a certain extent as well. So that's what we're trying to do. But boy, I mean, this is a hard thing to get through to the general public because,
it's an uphill battle.
Try telling a brain damaged person that they need to change what they're doing to other people, right?
Right. Better have some good defensive moves. Sorry, that was a bad joke. But there you go.
Oh, it's the truth, though, right?
Yeah, this is the truth.
Canola oil is linked to worsened memory and learning ability in Alzheimer's. Imagine that, Dr. Goforth.
Imagine that.
Canola oil, which they pushed and pushed and pushed on us for a long time, is actually not very good.
Oh, it's so great. It's gonna save the world. Not so much.
So here's the summary. This is from People University Health System. It says, canola oil is one of the most widely consumed vegetable oils, yet little is known about its health effects, which is the truth, right? Now a study links canola oil consumption in the diet with worsened memory and worsened learning ability and weight gain in mice, which model Alzheimer's disease. And it's the first study to suggest that canola oil is more harmful than helpful for the brain.
Yep.
So, again, that's another new product that was on the market that they pushed, and it's still pushing. And without any really science behind it, we'll just take rape seeds and squeeze them and take the oil out of them and just pretend these are healthy for you and go ahead and buy it. And this is good, and we'll just throw all kinds of stuff out there, and we can't back it up one iota.
Right.
So. Anyway.
I know. More science.
More scientism. You're right. And then, you know, the thing is we've been pushed this BS, this sugar is a healthy part of your diet, right? And it's really fat. And then we go, it's good fats and bad fats. But, you know, canola oil is one of the good fats. And we can't do fish oil because they're fish, right? They're living beings, and we shouldn't eat those things. Well, even though the vast majority of the human population throughout entire history of human species lived near water and consumed high amounts of fish in their diet, right? Even though evolutionarily that's what we did. All of a sudden, people go, oh, no, we can't do that. Let's do flax oil instead, because if we know these seeds that people don't eat are actually going to be better for us than not. And, you know, it's just, it gets so ridiculous times, it's unreal.
Right.
So anyway, guess what?
Well, it's time, isn't it?
It is.
Holy cow. I guess might be one of the first times that snuck up on me.
Yeah.
Huh.
Anyway, so I guess that concludes today's show. So until next time, here's to your health.